I want to speak about the practice of training the mind following the path taught by the revered founder of the Thai forest tradition, Venerable Ajahn Mun. He was one who practiced sincerely and wholeheartedly. Through learning about his life, we can gain more faith and confidence in the continual cycle of birth and death. This is important because in the time of the Buddha, the ascetics outside of the Buddha's teachings had extreme views. One was the belief in a self or soul that continued after death eternally. One would die and be born as that again. The other group had the view that after death would be annihilation, that there was nothing at all. If we study the biography of Venerable Ajahn Mun, he went wandering to practice in Sarika Cave. He practiced meditation there until he achieved noble attainment. And he met with one giant spirit who guarded this cave. The spirit was very tall and large and had a steel club that threatened to pound him into the ground. But Ajahn Mun didn't have any fear, no fear at all, because he had Dhamma in his heart. And he taught Dhamma to the giant spirit with wrong view, to have right view arise and to believe in the law of karma. The giant spirit boasted that he had power and authority over others and that he could get rid of all those staying in this cave. It so happened that there had been four monks who had meditated in this cave and had died there. Venerable Ajahn Mun himself became very sick, to the point blood was coming out of his stool. Ajahn Mun thought that he would be the fifth to die here. But with his determination, his mind entered samadhi, or deep concentration, and he contemplated the bodily elements, and all the sickness disappeared. And Ajahn Mun could teach the giant spirit to reduce his ego and pride, to accept karma, and not to do any more evil. And as it happened, the giant spirit was actually a high-level celestial being, and it took in Ajahn Mun. It highly respected him and protected Ajahn Mun so that he would be safe from dangers. Here we can see that it isn't that we die and there is nothing, but instead we die and follow our karma. Doing good karma, one is born in a good destination. Doing bad karma, the result is being born in a bad destination. Like the giant spirit who lived in this cave, Ajahn Mun could teach them to reduce their ego and pride, to reduce the part that didn't want to obey, the part that thought he was the best out of all beings. See, it's not that after death there is nothing. It's not that dying as a human, one will be born as a human always. It's not like that. So we need to build goodness, build our mind and heart to be better than before. Because we aren't just born in this life, we are born in a great many lifetimes. It's uncountable. But when we are born, then we think that we will live forever. But the Buddha taught us that all conditioned things, whether material or mental, are impermanent. It's not that there is no self, it is that it is not self. If there is no self at all, then it enters the field that there is nothing at all, it is annihilated. But the Buddha taught that materiality and mentality is not permanent and is not self. It is conditions coming together, arising, persisting, and ceasing. Whatever things it is, it has a nature to arise, persist, and cease. These things are not us, not ours, and is not self. But the wrong view of ours that we call vipalasa, or the distortions in the mind, we still have a lot of. What are these distortions of view? this rupa and nama, or this bodily heap and mind, is not permanent. Yet we understand it as permanent. This body and mind is suffering. It is not lasting. It must change. But we understand it as happiness. This body and mind is not self, but we understand it as a self. When we sit meditation here today, we feel at ease. But the Buddha said that this bodily heap is suffering. When we sit here a long time, the discomfort, pain, and weariness of the body arises. What is the thing that hides this dukkha or suffering? It is the change in posture that hides the suffering. When we sit a long time and feel discomfort and pain, we change posture to walk, lie down, or go stand, and the discomfort and pain is gone. When we then walk a long time, again we get tired and have discomfort, and then we go sit again, and then that pain that is suffering is gone. Or we think sleeping is really good, but if we sleep a long time in that one posture, it is suffering again. We need to turn over to lie on our left side, then to the right side. Or longer than this, we need to change our posture to sitting. Can we see that this body is a heap of suffering? It cannot last and must break down. But the change in posture hides this suffering. It is the posture that hides dukkhang. So we don't see it. We think it's ongoing happiness. So at the times we are changing our posture, may we contemplate first that this body is a heap of suffering. To sit a long time, walk a long time, stand a long time, lie down a long time is suffering. Or even talking a lot is suffering. It all must change. Or try not talking at all. That is suffering too. We must talk. This arises in the mind, and the mind orders the body. So when we contemplate the changes in posture, we will then understand that the body is really suffering. And pursuing this further, we see that the in-breath arises and stays momentarily, then the in-breath ceases. It's not permanent. But then the out-breath arises, stays, and then the out-breath ceases. It continues on like this. The breath then influences the rate the heart pumps blood, 60 times per minute, 70, or even 100 times. It's up to the health of one's body. It changes all the time. And this makes us not see impermanence. But when the breath ceases, or the heart stops beating, the body stops working, then we'll be able to see impermanence arise. But the impermanence that arises in the present is here already. This arising, persisting, and ceasing. Arising, persisting, ceasing. If we sat here and we didn't breathe for 5 minutes, we would all fall and die right here. This impermanence we don't see. The mind's view and perception is distorted because of the continuation of the breath and the working of the body. So here we look at anatta that we call non-self. What hides this non-self? It is this gathering together as a heap of elements: earth element, water element, heat element, air element, that comes together, and it is seen as a me and mine, or as a self. The Buddha said it is not a self, it is non-self. It's a coming together of elements according to nature, that's all. It is constantly changing according to causes and conditions. So we must have wisdom to train the mind and develop the mind well. We do so by developing samadhi or concentration so that our mind is firm. Be with one meditation object, develop one-pointedness of mind. The mind that usually thinks left and right, we determine to have mindfulness to bring back the mind, to have mindfulness to know along with the in and out breath. We do this in conjunction with the meditation word, Butto, until the mind has enough strength. Then we can mentally separate the bodily elements and the body, like Venerable Ajahn Mun taught. And we will see that in reality, there isn't a self there. Here the mind will have purity arise, emptiness arise, happiness and internal contentment from this seeing of Dhamma. Or we can try to have mindfulness to look at the mind. When our mind has greed, hatred, and delusion, then we must have mindfulness to train the mind, to teach the mind, and to see the feelings, the various feelings that arise in the mind as impermanent. They are suffering and not self. Not us, not them. If we think it is us, we are deluded already. We train like this more and more and contemplate through our daily life. When we see material objects, we contemplate them as impermanent. They aren't permanent, lasting, or certain. When we see people walking here and there, we see that they are impermanent, not lasting, not certain. We see ourselves and see us as not permanent, not lasting and uncertain. Contemplate throughout our daily life. Sometimes we see the beauty of us or them, and then we contemplate again. Is the body really beautiful? Why do we do this? Because the distortions of the mind, it sees wrongly that the unbeautiful is beautiful. Like this body that isn't beautiful at all. We understand it as beautiful. This is a distortion of the mind. When we can contemplate our own body or the bodies of others as not beautiful, then our mind becomes more beautiful and more radiant because it sees according to wisdom. Seeing according to wisdom is important. When wisdom arises, it cuts off the mental defilements and they fall away. So it's not that lay people can't practice Dhamma. When we have a breath, then we can train to have mindfulness to know the breath. Venerable Ajahn Chah once asked, "Do you have time to breathe?" The lay person answered, "I have time." So when you say you don't have time to practice, that isn't true. The lay person understood. If that person has mindfulness to know their breath, then they are practicing already, and we breathe all day. Ajahn Chah taught like this. When we walk here and there, then meditate by reciting Butto a lot. Or sometimes we can use our contemplation. This contemplation to make the mind peaceful regularly is training the mind as well. One method is to mentally recite Butto, Butto a lot, to bring the mind to peace and stillness. Another way is through contemplating, and then from that arises peace and stillness. So both are simply ways of making the mind peaceful. And the mind that has peace and stillness may then see aspects of nature, like trees, mountains, or leaves that fall. We may see leaves that fall to the ground, and we can contemplate them as Dhamma. It may be an old leaf, a yellow one, a brown one, or a light green leaf that falls down. And this we can compare to the lives of humans. Some die in the mother's womb, some die as a child, some as a teenager, some in middle age, some in old age. It is not certain. It isn't certain. Wisdom arises, and we see impermanence. We see it as not lasting or certain, that this body is impermanent and uncertain. This body is dukkhang, suffering. This body is non-self, not me or mine. This body is not attractive or beautiful. The mind is peaceful and we contemplate with insight, and wisdom arises. Each person can practice and train like this. It will cut off the four distortions of view, and we will see the Dhamma. Or if samadhi of ours is firm, Ajahn Chah said that we don't need to go mentally separating this or that much. We just teach our mind that the feeling that arises is impermanent. The liking, disliking, the anger, the hatred, the fear is impermanent, all of it. Teach the mind, just using the word impermanent, uncertain. Teach the mind to have wisdom arise. We teach the mind more and more, and then the mind will see nature. It will see the truth. This is called wisdom arising. May you be determined to train the mind. What you learn in the monastery, then go home and practice it often. Make the mind have wisdom arise in your daily life through developing both the training of the mind to be peaceful and the training of the mind to have wisdom. We practice in whatever surroundings we live in. We are always with our body and mind, so practice to see impermanence in it more and more often. Staying in the present moment, then the mind will be released and enters the true nature of the heart. We follow the great venerable monks, Ajahn Mun and Ajahn Chah of ours, who taught us according to what they saw, found, and attained in Dhamma already. May you all practice this way. It's a right path and the most direct path, that is, letting go of all clinging and attachments, letting go of all mind states. If we can't yet let go, we need to practice, starting from giving, morality, and developing the mind by being mindful and meditating. We do this until we can be proficient and skilled in our meditation. Do this continuously each day, and the mind will progress and get better. May you all meet with success in the world and in the Dhamma. May you all grow in blessings.